How can you learn to fly without a practice area? Why would you want to? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. I'm with Bob Miller, the publisher of Over the Airwaves, Journal for the Proficient Pilot. Also, Bob operates his own flight training school in the Buffalo, New York area, and we're here to talk safety topics. Thanks for being here.
Paul, it's a pleasure.
Bob, you have something sort of interesting and industry-shaking to say, and that is that you have come to avoid practice areas. I had a couple that I used frequently when I was learning to fly, and it was out in the middle of nowhere, and I'm not sure anybody else, you know, was likely to be there on any given time. But tell us about a couple of the incidents that have happened that have led you to conclude that flying students into practice areas has got to stop.
Well, we keep hearing about collisions, and fortunately, they don't happen all that often. We probably get a dozen fatal collisions a year in the United States. But I was doing some research on a collision that occurred last December, that involved two flight training flights near Hollywood, Florida. One was a student and an instructor in a Cessna 172, and he was prepping a student for his instrument check ride. So we had an instructor and a presumably a fairly experienced student in that aircraft. And then there was a Piper Cherokee was prepping his student for a commercial multi-engine rating, just getting ready to get that taken care of. And unfortunately, both planes collided in clear VFR conditions, 2,000 feet, 10 miles visibility, and all four people were killed in that wreck. And the wreck occurred inside one of several designated practice areas that they have in the Florida area. And I've seen this problem up here in our area as well. Particularly, a practice area to me is one of the most dangerous places to be outside of the traffic pattern itself. First of all, we have a student who's listening to the instructor and an instructor who is instructing primarily, and neither of whom are spending a great deal of time doing what they should be doing, and that's looking out the window. And I was wondering and thinking about the origin of the practice area. What even brought this concept into the flight training mix? And the only thing I can come up with is the desire to avoid perhaps talking with ATC. So you call ATC and you say, hey, listen, stick me in an area where we'll be out of the flow of your normal commercial traffic into and out of the major airports in your area, and we're just going to puddle around up here. We won't be bothering you. Don't bother us, and we're going to be talking. And that then became designated as maybe the North practice area or the South practice area. And to me, the whole notion of a practice area is a bit artificial. We don't obtain our pilot certificates to go fly in practice areas. And it's something that we've tried to avoid in our flight training mix.
Well, Bob, you're obviously talking about the need for scenario-based training versus fantasy-based training.
Well put, Paul.
When we come back from the break here in a moment, let's talk about how you actually pull that off and what might make practice areas safer if there's no other way. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. Back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. Talking about the practice area, or the practice box, or whatever you want to call it. Every little airport that has a Part 61 flight school has at least one, maybe more, of these practice areas. And Bob, I guess the issue I have with all scenario-based training, to the exclusion of the repetition-based training or rote training, whatever you want to call it, that we're used to over the years, is that at some point, you still need to practice takeoffs and landings. Now, if you're going to avoid a practice area for things like slow flight,
I can see where you could manage to do those on a cross country. But when it comes down to the kind of repetition you need just to meet the requirements and to get people accustomed to taking off and landing, is that a less dangerous thing to be in an aircraft in an airport pattern than it is to be over a practice box?
I'm not sure what is more risky or less risky. Back to the basic question of the practice area, I think any time that we're maneuvering in the open skies, we need to be talking to ATC, if that's at all possible. Now, I know that there's wide open areas in the United States and throughout the world where we don't have local ATC radar coverage, and I can't speak to those areas. But here in the East, and I'm sure in the West, the far West, most areas have radar coverage, and to the extent that we can obtain ATC services, we need to be doing that. Now, as to taking off and landing at the same airport repetitiously, back and forth through the same pattern, I think that's effective only in part, in the sense that it does teach some skills that are needed to be taught through repetition. The art of landing an airplane on a concrete or grass runway. But beyond that, the real difficulty that I think we see is that we have pilots entering patterns every different which way, from every different possible altitude, from every different angle. And that's because as soon as they finish their training and they get through their check ride, they are now seeing for the first time what it's like to operate at new and different airports. They never did this as part of their training. And I think this is where we're seeing a lot of mishaps that are occurring in the pattern, because students or pilots are simply not familiar with doing that. Now, as I say that, I recognize the criticism of the scenario-based training in that it takes a little bit more time than the typical 35-hour or 40-hour curriculum. But if you have any nearby airports, and we have a bunch of them here near Buffalo, they're not all hard surface. We take off, for example, we'll take off from our little airport in Akron, and we'll fly 7 miles to another airport, Buffalo Airport. And then we'll fly 11 miles to Hamburg, and then we'll fly another 11 miles to Gowanda, and then we'll fly another 6 miles out to South Dayton, and then we'll turn around and come back. And we can do all of those airports inside an hour and a half flight. The student obtains the same number of actual takeoff and landings, but believe me, they are approaching decidedly different airports, narrow short strips, grass strips, long concrete strips. And in that 1 hour and a half session, that individual has achieved a whole lot more in terms of maneuvers-based training, slow flight, steep turns, than he would trying to do this artificially in some remote practice area.
Okay, let's talk about turns around a point as an example of something that you need to have some sort of practice area, whether you call it a practice area, whether it's different every time or what. When I was learning to fly, there was a practice area near the airport that was very commonly used for things like turns around a point and, you know, S-turns and all those maneuvers, because there were some very good landmarks and it was out of everybody's way. How do you do that without having some place that you can count on to go to, or do you just pick a different one every time?
No, I keep a camera in my flight bag, and I say to the student, hey, listen, I got to get a couple of pictures of this barn down here. And I might make up a story or a fantasy or just a scenario saying, I'm thinking of buying this piece of property down here. Would you circle me over this barn? I'd like to do it between 600 and 1,000 feet. Just keep me at a constant altitude and just give me a concentric circle around that barn. Oh, really, Bob? Well, all right, let me see what I can do. And I'll say, well, you know, now be sure that we have no obstacles out there and that we have a safe landing area. And in order to get the circles right, let's be sure we watch the winds. And now this is a different exercise than going to the blackboard and writing, you know, 33 times, I will not let the dog eat my homework again. It's a real scenario. I did one with you, Paul. You might remember on the flight review that you and I did. We did turns around Niagara Falls.
That's
quite
right.
Literally.
That's right.
And we had to watch out for other traffic, and we certainly had to maintain an assigned altitude. So that was very realistic. The problem that we're trying to address here is not only to teach a person how to fly safely, but we have an equally perplexing problem in general aviation. We've talked about this many times, that about 40% of every new student who obtains a medical doesn't complete his primary training. He grows bored with it. He grows disenchanted. She doesn't see the purpose of going out there and doing these rote exercises. We fail as an instructing community to light their fire, to show them the romance of aviation. And by going out and visiting these other airports, and by the way, several of the airports that I mentioned earlier have hot dog stands, ice cream stands, within walking distance. So this really breaks off the routine of learning to fly. We'll fly to three different airports, park the airplane in the grass, run over, grab an ice cream cone, talk a little bit, get back into that airplane, and then have the student retrace his steps. And that instills some understanding of pilotage. How did we get here? Well, you got here. Now let's see if you can use the same landmarks to get back. This is real flying, in my opinion, and it really is putting the romance back into it, and it keeps people wanting to come back for more. And in I say parenthetically to each of my students, I said, you know, when you get your certificate and you take friends for rides in airplanes, understand that they don't have the same love for flying that you do. My wife is a perfect example. She would no sooner get in an airplane and fly around in circles. I'd get up there on a Sunday morning just for a bit of comic relief. But make the destination worthwhile. Make the scenes along the way worthwhile, and your friends will fly with you every day of the week.
Yeah.
And this is what we try to teach them, show them. I've had flight instructors I've hired from nearby flight schools. And I say, let's go over to this grass strip, or let's go over to Gowanda or South Dayton. These are places that have been on the chart for as long as there's been charts, and these flight instructors have never been there. In fact, several of the flight instructors we've hired have never flown off grass. And I'm saying, what do you guys teach over there? What did you teach in the flight school that you came from? Just big, heavy concrete runways? I mean, this is only a very small segment of the general aviation pilot who's going to be flying on big concrete runways. Let them get out and get that sport pilot certificate, or let them get out and buy a J3 Cub, or even a Cessna 172 and take that sucker out on the grass. It opens up a whole new world of excitement.
Let me ask you one final question about practice areas for those who feel compelled to use them. My observation is that around some small airports, people are likely to stay on the CTAF frequency rather than move off to any other frequency that's unique to that practice area airspace. Is there something we could do there to make airspace safer?
Sure. I think we have to bring our students over to ATC, and we do this quite regularly, over to the radar facility, over to the tower. You know, I tell our students, and I say, you'll be surprised when you go over and visit these controllers. Now, they've sharpened up the dress code a little bit in recent months over at our place. Now they come to work in slacks and, a clean shirt. But I remember several years ago, and I thought this was nothing wrong with this. You'd go in there and you'd see these guys in shorts, in T-shirts, in sneakers. Without socks. These were air traffic controllers. And what this said to my students is these people are human. You know, they are just like you and I. And there tends to be an intimidation factor, and I don't know where it originates from, whether it's because the instructor doesn't like to talk with ATC. They go off someplace where they don't have to talk with them. And I think this is a tremendous shortcoming that we have in flight instruction. ATC is not that state trooper in the bushes. The air traffic controller is that second or third member of the cockpit crew who's there to make our job a whole lot easier, a whole lot more pleasant, more relaxing, and ultimately safer. And so if we can get our students talking with these controllers on the radio almost from day one, another thing that we do in our area, we have a group of pilots and air traffic controllers, about 35 to 40 of us all together, that meet periodically over at a local steakhouse for dinner and drinks and lots of fun and chat and we get to know the picture from the other perspective, and bringing students along to this to say, hey, listen, you know, that guy behind the mic at the TRACON, he's on your side, George. He's not on their side. He's on your side. He wants to make your life easier and happier. And the more we can do that, and get students and pilots to be talking to ATC, I think the whole world will be a whole lot safer.
Well, Bob, that is our goal, and that's why we'll be back here again next Monday. Thanks very much for spending some time with us today.
Thanks, Bob.
You can find the latest edition of Bob's newsletter at overtheairwaves.com. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.